CliffCentral.com.
It's 22 after 8. All right, Michael Tellinger's here. Michael, I have read some of your stuff before, so I'm not completely green about where you come from and what you do. And Michael Flax tells me that you haven't been in a radio interview. These people refuse to interview you. They refuse to talk to you for a number of years now. No one wants to have these discussions with you. What's that all about?
Firstly, hi, Gareth. And,
hey.
And thank you for having me on your show.
Sure. I can't believe people don't want to talk to you. What, they think you're a lunatic?
Well, that's their decision.
Is that what they think?
I'm not going to say that, but let's put it this way. The academia in this country do not necessarily hold me in high esteem. Yes. Uh-huh. I come from the same universities with the same degrees, but because I'm not part of the club and I make discoveries that go against the flow of their belief systems, we can't talk to this guy. He's a bit too weird, you know.
Didn't Graham Hancock go through the same thing?
All the people like Graham, you know, I've gotten to know Graham very well. We've done many shows and many conferences around the world together over the last 11 years. And so I go around the world and I do talks and presentations and workshops. I've probably done more than 200 cities around the world and 30 countries,
mm-hmm.
and in South Africa.
So what is it? Is it because you have an alternative view of how history might be put together and it's not linear like the standard textbook history that we are taught at school, and therefore you're a threat to the academics who have to be aligned to that history because that's what they teach.
That's what they teach, and that's what's in the history books. And remember, history books are written by the victors, so we have to put a big question mark about the integrity and the accuracy of the history books. And anything that is alternative, that doesn't go through the mainstream academic sources, is automatically frowned upon. And keep in mind that the world of exploration and science outside of the mainstream academia is much larger than the mainstream. This is like the Nazis controlling the flow of information.
Right. Okay. Now look, there's a lot to cover here, and this is why I'm glad you're here this morning, because we got to get people in the picture. There are two, three things about you that are all interesting. So the first one, we'll talk about the Ubuntu party and all of that stuff later on. The first thing I want to talk about is how history actually works. Surely when we make new discoveries, and surely when we find things that don't fit to the pattern that we've been taught, these things must be incorporated into the body of knowledge. They must challenge the existing ideas. Who would be against that? And I know you're not a conspiracy theorist, but this is how people like to paint you.
Yeah.
As being someone who's outside of the tent pissing in. That you are somehow a disruptor who has an alternative view of history that isn't accurate, but shame, let him have his weird theories here. How do you know that your theories are, and your discoveries and your evidence, how do you know that that stuff isn't wacky?
Because I deal with facts. I do what the guys in CSI do. I follow the clues and the evidence, and I base my conclusions on the clues and the evidence. It's as simple as that. And if the clues and the evidence say this, then it must be this. Not because somebody said it's not possible, but if I'm faced with certain statistics and facts and scientific facts, then I have to reach conclusions based on what I'm looking at and not because of what some history book said is not possible. And that's the problem.
So there is.
Sorry. And Gareth, and remember that once again, you've got to. Everything is connected, okay? So the fact that you mentioned Ubuntu, the Ubuntu movement, which is now probably the fastest growing movement of consciousness around the world, we are more than 200 countries, mm-hmm. is a consequence of my research into human origins and ancient civilizations when I realized that at one stage in our human history, money did not exist. And, you know, that brings up a huge question. Well, wow, what? Hold on one second. What happened when there was no money? So everything is connected, and you've got to take this journey of discovery and be open-minded enough to deal with the facts when you find them.
All right. So 10,000 years ago or so, we are led to believe that after the Great Ice Age, that humans had started to become civilized at some point, but only then, that they just started. So about 5,000 years ago, we had established certain kinds of civilizations, particularly in Egypt, in Mesopotamia, that people had started to put one stone on top of another and make things.
Yeah, well, that's not necessarily true. That's what we read in mainstream history books.
Okay, so what do you
The alternative history goes back much further in time.
Tell me what was happening.
I show in my research, especially in southern Africa, you mentioned the lost civilizations or the vanished civilizations, and in my books called Adam's Calendar and Temples of the African Gods, I show very clearly that the civilization and the history of southern Africa is much older than the Eurocentric beliefs would want us to have. Remember, all of the stuff that's forced down our throats is a Eurocentric history belief systems. It's got nothing to do with traditional and indigenous people's belief systems. If you speak to any African shaman, African sangomas, Native American shamans and around the world, mm-hmm. they'll tell you a very different history of their own people. The history that we're talking about here is a Eurocentric history that's been enforced on us through our textbooks. And that's where the deception comes in.
So then what did happen? What do we know about what existed before?
Well, the evidence is right in front of us. In my books, I show, for the first time, these stone circles in southern Africa that cover most of South Africa and Zimbabwe that have just been sort of relegated to cattle kraal and enclosures for migrating tribes, which mm-hmm. is nothing can be further from the truth. You know, we're dealing with more than 10 million ancient stone structures. Pay attention, 10 million, not a few thousand. So you've got to ask yourself, who the hell was here so long ago that could have built 10 million structures? Because according to mainstream history books, nobody lived here 5,000, 10,000 years ago. There were a bunch of bushmen running around with bows and arrows, shooting a buck here and a buck there. Mm. It's not possible that they could have built 10 million circular structures.
One of the reasons that Eurocentric kind of white superiority history, it doesn't make sense to people, is because there are actually signs of civilization in terms of inhabited settlements. It wasn't pure, you know, nomadic wandering around and nothing was built. These are things that you talk about, but a lot of mainstream history doesn't.
No, because they're scared of going out of the box because they might lose their job. I must have received more than 200 emails from archaeologists and historians from all over the world, and I'm talking mainstream universities, sending me their support and best wishes, saying, I love your work, I support everything you do, but I cannot support you publicly because I'll lose my job. That's literally what they tell me.
All right, so what were these stone circles if they weren't cattle kraals?
This is now where you start getting into the understanding of advanced technology of the ancient civilizations. And it gets into some very murky areas where some people are uncomfortable in going. And it deals with off-world existence. You know, and if you still believe that we are the only beings in the universe, then, you know, check yourself into a loony bin.
All right, well, yeah, okay. But this is where maybe the evidence is difficult to gather.
Yes.
Right?
So the scientific research shows very clearly that the stone circles are not dwellings for people nor animals. First of all, they have no doors and entrances. So you're not going to build dwellings for cattle or animals or people without entrances. The stone circles are connected via channels. They are concentric circles with special walls, then special stones used in these circles known as hornfels or very rich in iron content and rich in silica and quartz. These stone circles are connected to each other. They exist in large clusters. And what I found when we started doing research is that they generate huge amounts of energy, electromagnetic waves, sound frequencies in the high gigahertz. And that's not something that can happen naturally in nature. And the electromagnetic fields inside the stone circles that scramble GPS, these are consciously built energy generating devices. So our entire country is littered, and Zimbabwe, parts of Botswana, Mozambique, and it goes beyond the Zambezi, but mostly concentrated here and Zimbabwe, including Great Zimbabwe, by the way.
Right.
These are energy generating devices that generate unimaginable amounts of energy. And some of them are built, for example, in the shapes of magnetrons. Magnetrons are electronic devices we use today in laser beams, laser technology, SASER technology possibly as well, which is sound as lasers. Mm-hmm. And magnetrons are in microwave ovens. Tiny little magnetron can create a beam that can cut metal in a split second. So understand the amount of energy these things generate.
This is incredible. I can understand why a lot of people would say, oh, you know, the guy's off his rocker, because it sounds crazy to imagine that there are ancient technologies that we don't even have a grip on now.
Exactly.
That preexisted the dawn of known civilization.
What this points to is that the ancient vanished civilizations lived very differently to the way we live. Remember, we're enslaved species. We're completely and utterly enslaved. And this is what the Ubuntu movement is all about, showing people how the banking system and the global elite, the bankers, have pretty much taken the world hostage to their financial systems. But if you take it back further beyond the first emergence of money on Earth, you find ancient civilizations that were responsible for all these megalithic structures around the world. And we talk about megalithic structures that we would really struggle to build today.
Right. In fact, I mean, we can't raise those dolmens and
exactly
build a pyramid like we
in the,
can't
if in
we
the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
If we had to try and build the pyramids of Giza now to that level of accuracy.
Yeah.
It would take us a long time, and I don't even think we'd be able to get it right. Because 1 degree of misalignment on the base means the whole thing's gonna be crooked.
Correct. So what this comes down to, Gareth, is that I think this is why the scientists around the world find my work more exciting than the archaeologists, actually, is because I've shown probably among all the researchers for the first time that we're dealing with ancient advanced technology, not dwellings for people. That most of these structures, including the Great Pyramid, including Stonehenge, including Borobudur, including
what's this one that they just discovered in Turkey a while ago? That's
Göbekli Tepe.
Göbekli Tepe. Now this is a very interesting thing. It apparently they've carbon dated some of the stuff they found around it, because obviously the stones you can't carbon date, and they say that this is much, much older than people think it is.
Exactly. And it's probably much older than they even claim it is now. Look, I place the southern African civilizations to between 200 and 300,000 years of age. And there were modern humans that lived here and did this. Okay,
according to most theory, humans, Homo sapiens sapiens, only arrived about 100, 200,000 years ago. You're saying no, we're much older.
That is a double-edged question. Because you got to ask yourself, okay, the Homo sapiens as we know them today arrived probably at that time, but prior to that, there were other types of beings living here that possibly resembled us, possibly looked different, slightly different to us, but carry our genetic strand and structure here that we carry on.
So they interbred with these other things?
Interbreeding, cloning, there's all kinds of stuff going on here. Okay. And again, if you don't have a wide enough mind, then, you know, get back in the box and close the lid and stay there.
So, what do you think of that, Mubs?
I'm going to need a day or two to process what you're saying here this morning.
So we're much older than we think we are.
Much, much older. And for the people that are, you know, still skeptics out there, please go and read Michael Cremo's book on forbidden archaeology. That is the Bible on suppressed archaeology by mainstream institutions. And keep in mind, who controls everything? The bankers control everything.
Now you start getting like a conspiracy theory.
Not at all. This has nothing to do with conspiracies. Absolutely. Remember, who funds the research facilities at the universities? Okay. So who funds the textbooks? So when you start breaking it down, it always comes down to the money.
Who are these people? Are they sitting in a room somewhere plotting against the rest of us?
I don't think they're sitting in a room. It's a lot bigger than that. But let's just come back to the technology and the evidence, because this is really important. What I'd like your listeners to know.
I'm not a skeptic in this respect. I'm going to go in with an open mind.
Good. What I'd like you and your listeners to know is that I'm dealing with some of the world's leading scientists and researchers that you could find. And these are the guys that are excited about these discoveries, because it brings us closer to a deep understanding of the laws of nature and actually understanding how things work, what matter is, where matter comes from. And everything in our society, everything in our reality, in our creation, is a consequence of resonance, frequency, and sound. Remember, it says in the beginning of the Bible, God said, let there be light. So that even there, the opening phrase of the Bible tells us that the Creator created even light is a consequence of sound, because it's the sound of the Creator that manifested everything, resonance and frequency. And light is a consequence of that. I'm just, you know, in my lectures and workshops, I go to great detail and the scientific detail that they don't teach us at school and at university. It's all Newtonian crap and bullshit that they, I can swear on your radio.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. You can say what you want.
Right. So it's all this stuff that they put into boxes, and the holy trinity of lies that they teach us at school is that everything comes, that you can't create and destroy energy, that nothing moves beyond the speed of light, and that we evolved out of apes. Those are the three, I call the three Holy Trinity questions, and we dispel those very quickly, you know, in the workshops and the lectures.
So we're not evolved from the apes.
We certainly did not evolve, no.
We didn't evolve.
We are not an evolved. There is no evidence whatsoever. It's a theory. Remember, it's a theory of evolution. And that theory has been shoved so far down our throats that most people now accept that theory as fact.
I mean, we've got... There is evidence. That's
what
nonsense.
Evidence? What evidence? They draw a bunch of pictures from apes steadily upright and
now fossils. There's no guy from Goldman Sachs who's burying fake fossils of intermediary species between us and an ancient primate ancestor.
And there you go. There is no evidence between us and all these.
Yes, there is.
There are all these species.
Look, this is another sediba. This Homo naledi they discovered the other day. Do you think this is part of the conspiracy?
No, not at all. It is what it is. That's what it is. They found a species. That doesn't mean that it's our ancestor. Okay.
But evolution is a fact. I mean, your wisdom teeth, your coccygeal vertebrae, the appendix, for God's sake. These are all things that we can actually see evolution manifesting in our very bodies this very day.
What you need to do is, and I'll put you in touch with some genetic engineers that are masters in this, to have a discussion with them and just show you how inaccurate our perception is and our belief. It's a belief that's been given to us over years now. That is part of the disinformation through the mainstream education.
Okay, so if we didn't come from apes, then what's your theory?
Well, all ancient cultures tell us that we come from the stars. And once again, the Eurocentric belief system comes. The Europeans arrive here.
Okay, but
the Europeans
didn't decide that they were going to manufacture this in order to own and control and regulate everybody else. This is what they discovered. I mean, ancient Greek philosophers weren't sitting around trying to master the universe. They were trying to understand it. It came from the point of view that you come from. Like, let's try to have an open mind. Let's see how this stuff makes sense. And they weren't, when they talked about ancient Egypt or ancient Mesopotamia, they weren't trying to create a historical narrative that suited Eurocentricism. There wasn't such a thing.
No. They also didn't give us details about many of those things. They left a lot of that information very open for interpretation. I would like to come back because we can get hijacked on the whole thing of evolution.
Let's leave that alone. It's
a big subject. It's a huge subject. And what I'm going to throw in here is that most of the world's leading geneticists tell you very clearly that our DNA is not an evolved DNA. It is a patchwork of cloned DNA. Okay, do with that information what you want.
Well, we know that a large part of our DNA is probably from bacteria that live inside and around us.
That's quite possible, but again, it's a much bigger subject that requires time on its own.
But you're not the geneticist.
I'm not the geneticist, and I'm here. Although I have enough information about that, but I'd like to talk to you about the tools and artifacts that I've discovered here in South Africa.
I want to talk about the Ubuntu party and movement. But let's talk to Ashton. He wants to ask you something. Ashton, go ahead.
I've been listening to this conversation, and it's very interesting to me, but it also resonates to what Zachariah Sitchin talks about in his books. I'm not sure if you are familiar with it. I like the way your guest is thinking about everything that's connected, because when I started reading Zachariah Sitchin's books and watching these documentaries, the same thing happened to me. I started linking everything together, and everything that he talks about is similar to what you're talking about right now. So I'm very interested in his books, and so I really want to get my hands on that. Is there a way that I can do that?
Yeah, you can. You can go onto my website, michaeltellinger.com. And I think, unfortunately, they're busy redoing it right now. So it's been pulled off until the new one gets
loaded. Your books are available all over the place. So.
Yeah, you can get them on Amazon. At the moment, Amazon is probably the safest place to get it.
All right.
Okay, and have you read any of Zachariah Sitchin's?
Who is this Zachariah? Zachariah sounds like a very old biblical name.
I know Zachariah Sitchin very well. Okay. I had the pleasure of talking to him and meeting him in New York.
What's his story, Michael? Because, I mean, Ashton's not articulating this very well.
Okay, Zachariah Sitchin has become one of the world's most famous translators of Sumerian texts.
Oh, wow. So cuneiform language.
Cuneiform language, yes.
All right.
And Zachariah Sitchin in the late 60s already started breaking the news that what we call mythology is actually our true human history. And that becomes
so
very evident.
So this would include the story of, Ashton, who was the guy?
Gilgamesh, absolutely.
The Epic of Gilgamesh is the story in ancient Sumerian. Yeah. Now, everything has a flood. There are cultures spread across the entire face of the earth who never had anything to do with each other for thousands of years that all have a story of a great flood.
Yeah.
So it's quite possible that this is the flood was the barrier between the flood, ancient history and the current ancient history.
The flood, or the deluge as it's called sometimes, is a huge dividing line between the ancient civilizations and what we call the more modern civilizations.
Because it stands to reason that if there was a great flood, like a monstrous flood with glacial, epic, monstrous proportions to it, that this thing wiped out pretty much all the evidence of any kind of surface existence of certain human beings and certain civilizations. And everything before that is called antediluvian.
Exactly.
And everything afterward is what we learn in current history.
Also keep in mind, you know, like the opening phrase of the Bible is a distortion of fact. It was actually changed from the original Hebrew. The original Hebrew was the word Abba was removed from it, and it just starts with the word Ba. Ba Rashit Shamayim, blah, blah. I can't remember the exact phrase in Hebrew. But basically it says the Father, it says in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, which is absolute distortion of the fact. The original truth says the Father of the Abba, Rashit Shamayim, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's the Father of the beginnings created the Elohim, the heavens and the earth. So the Elohim come into phrase. And the question is, who the hell are the Elohim? Right? Or the Elohim, the giants, or the giant beings. So the Elohim question is a huge discussion on its own.
That's if you credit the Bible with being a historical document.
No,
and you're saying a lot of mythology is our ancient history. We just don't know how to interpret it.
It's all connected, Gareth.
Okay, all right.
It's all connected. What we read in the Bible is filled with scientific fact described in words that most people completely misinterpret and misunderstand.
Well, because it's a lot of it is bullshit too. Come on.
A lot of it is a fairy tale.
What, a snake in a tree
opera?
And people eating an apple and suddenly all of it goes awry. Come on.
Yeah. You can't throw that out because it's metaphor for something much bigger, right? You understand metaphor
This is that secret language that makes people think, oh, someone's trying to take control of this situation. Someone's trying to politically manipulate me.
But if you speak to all wise men and wise women of Africa and the custodians of ancient knowledge, and fortunately they are still alive, many of them are alive, and I've spoken to many of them here and around the world, especially like the original people of Australia, and the Native Americans and Canadians and so forth, and the African shamans here. They carry so much knowledge and information, and much of that knowledge and information is also encoded with metaphors and so forth. So one's got to be very clear in understanding how these stories are handed down.
All right. So let me imagine how this civilization worked, because this is what I think gets people excited. There were these creatures that were kind of maybe like us, maybe they contributed to who we are now. However, but these people, these things had an ability to use sound to make things, to move things, to change things. They didn't have a currency.
No. Money only appeared about 6,000 years ago.
Do we have any idea of what they may have been like? How they may have lived?
Well, that's a huge question. And I don't know if anybody has any idea, but what we do have is the evidence of their presence, and these are the giant megalithic sites, the ancient sites left behind below the ocean floors, below the ocean at places, tops of mountains, building structures that defy any kind of logic, why they would build such structures. What I have discovered, even the temples of Egypt, that we think are temples for offering this and offering that, you know, to the gods and all that. That's all BS. All of these ancient structures, mm-hmm. virtually without exception, are energy generating devices. Okay. Those giant structures in Egypt, actually giant silicon chip circuit boards. They're dealing with advanced technology on a radically huge, large scale. And if people want to go and look at my presentations online, many of them available, you know, 2-hour, 3-hour long presentations where I go into a lot of detail here to show you how advanced this technology is and how on such a large scale it was built on an unimaginable scale to us today because they weren't controlled by money. They were doing things because they decided to do it. Today, we're not going to do it because money will prevent us from doing that. And I guess in many ways, I've provided the evidence for this through the discoveries here in South Africa, through the tools and artifacts that I've collected and in my little museum that I've put together.
What kinds of things have you got?
Two very important things are the cone-shaped tools and the donut-shaped stones. In South African archaeology, the donut-shaped stones are relegated to weights for digging sticks. It is the most insulting and ridiculous statement to make by any historian, archaeologist. It is a complete made-up story, fictitious. It's devoid of
any
truth.
What do you say these donut-shaped stones are for?
Well, we have scientific evidence of what they are.
Okay.
Once again, I don't say it because I think so. I say so because I know so.
Are they made of a certain kind of mineral?
They're all made of very dense granite kind of stone. Some more dense than others. Some made up of stones like Hornfels, which is even denser. The most important thing that we have is that they have very high acoustic qualities.
Okay.
Okay. I've picked up stones, very elongated stones and stones that I call that ring-like bells. The stones in the stone circles that I've mentioned earlier are all stones that have high acoustic properties. This is quartz. We're dealing with crystals. Quartz, crystalline substance. And remember, crystal holds memory. Crystals can store digital data. And we can talk about that in much more detail.
Well, what is a circuit board? But exactly.
So these, we're talking about using crystalline silicon-based technology by using the silicon in its original form. We're not extracting it out of its original form.
SiO2.
Yes.
Got you. Okay.
Exactly.
That's by the way, silicon dioxide is what sand is.
Crystal. Exactly.
Ground,
so,
rock.
So now you've got the most advanced technology known to us today, used in ancient times, but they didn't have to extract it out of the rock. They used the rock in its own raw form because they knew how to use it.
To do what?
To create energy, to create resonance. So the stone
What are they
circles,
doing with all this energy?
Good question.
Because humans, if you leave us to our own devices, the only reason we accumulate energy is to destroy each other.
At the moment, that's what it is, yeah.
So what were these guys doing, and how come there aren't any of them left? They must have destroyed each other too.
Well, it's the one common denominator there is gold. And once again, that becomes a huge subject. What gold is, where it comes from, why our obsession with gold.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you cannot separate human existence from our obsession with gold.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
true. In Genesis 2, before Eve was even created, the narrator of the Bible, whoever that was, talks about taking Adam to the land of Havilah where there is gold. And you got to ask yourself, why does the narrator of the Bible want Adam to go to where there is gold? And
yeah, it's just a metal that doesn't react very well,
so,
and it's yellow in color. That's
exactly.
Pretty much the only thing that makes it exceptional.
Exactly.
But would these ancient people have been interested in gold?
Yes. And when you read Zachariah Sitchin and other researchers and other translations of the Sumerian texts, you come upon these group of beings called the Anunna gods, or the Anunna beings, or the Anunnaki. And they take on the central role in manipulating and creating the history as we have it today. And if anybody is not aware of this, wake up, smell the coffee, and catch up. Because this is it. This is the most important thing that people need to wake up and
so
to
the Anunnaki.
The true origins.
I'm hearing Illuminati.
Not necessarily.
I'm hearing banking clans.
Not necessarily. The Anunnaki are a group of beings that have advanced knowledge. You could possibly call them multidimensional beings for those that understand what I'm talking about. But these guys.
What's a multidimensional being? Explain it to those of us who don't know.
Beings that can manifest and exist in different dimensions. It's all a consequence of frequency and resonance. Hmm. Okay. Remember, everything exists in physical form because of a certain frequency.
That's right, Michael. Spread my name.
Mavs, what do you think of all this?
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, it is.
Because essentially what you're saying is that I have to accept the fact that I've been duped my whole life. And I'm an idiot.
And that is the biggest problem.
Which is
problem.
Difficult for anybody to
exactly.
accept. Is I refuse to accept that they've been lying to
yes,
me the whole
that's
time.
It. And that's how people are so... What did Morpheus say to Neo? Right? Do you remember what he said to Neo?
Take
after
the red
blue pill
or the
and
blue,
red pill?
Yeah.
Exactly. This is, you're in the Matrix. The Matrix is everywhere. You know? And... read the Ubuntu book and it'll explain everything to you.
Okay, so let's just leave all that alone for a second because we've got to pick up on this again at some point. We're out of time almost. But how does Ubuntu factor into all of this? How does contributionism factor into your alternate history of the world?
Mm. It's when I was researching all of this stuff in 2005 and writing Slave Species of God, which has become a big international
that's
seller.
The one I've read.
Yeah, and... So I realized that there was a time that money didn't exist. And I was shocked. I just went, what? I thought money was always around, you know, we're duped by this. And I started going into researching what money is, where does it come from, how did it appear, who controls it, and why is it ruling our lives, why mm-hmm. is it destroying our lives? And I realized that money suddenly appeared sometime in around 6,000 years, give or take a few thousand years, because okay. time doesn't really matter in that kind of antiquity. And then I started imagining, well, what would a world without money look like? And at first, it's impossible to imagine. Mm. But the more I started looking at it, I started realizing that money is not the solution. Money is the problem. That money was...
More money, more problems.
That money was introduced to humanity. Basically, that was my outcome. Money was introduced as a tool of control.
Saint Notorious B.I.G. once said in one of his psalms to the people that more money is more problems, right? Yeah. So basically, if money is the root of all evil, if we're led to believe this... I mean, there isn't really a world that we could get rid of money, is there?
Of course there is. It's really? All in the Ubuntu book. And this is why when people wake up, when they have their moment of enlightenment, the moment of awakening, as millions of people have every day, they wake up and they say, I can't do this anymore. There's got to be something better than this. I wasn't born to be a slave. This is it.
That sounds
I've got
good.
To find something
but that's
different.
Like, that's like blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. That,
not
that
at
appeals.
All.
That appeals to people who have nothing, so they believe it because it makes them feel better about themselves.
Not at all. It appeals to very, very wealthy people as well. Gareth, I've been doing this for 11 years around the world, spreading this Ubuntu philosophy.
Right.
And I'll tell you, it appeals to the rich as well as much as it appeals to the poor. I'll tell you why. Because the people that have made millions, sometimes billions, know how fine the line is between all or nothing. Mm. They know they can lose it tomorrow. In a split second, it's all gone. And then they start thinking more spiritually about who am I as a living, breathing human being? Why am I here? What am I doing? And they start to realize that there's got to be something more. And
but
that's
what,
this is
what if it's too late for us? Because we all love money now.
Too late
and,
for what?
And we want more of it.
No, you don't want more of it. You want to live a beautiful life. Everybody wants to live a beautiful life, and we think that money will give us a beautiful
yes.
life. And that's not true. It'll just get us into more and more misery. The only way we can get a beautiful life, and this is, I think, why so many people resonate with this message, is to go back to, instead of competing, cooperating and collaborating. Competition is possibly the most evil thing that's ever been imposed on humanity, where we compete against each other for scraps of food, for whatever, instead of cooperating,
that's
collaborating.
Survival. That's like survival. If the tribe next to you is weak, you must take their stuff. that's ancient. That's got to be like, you see it in animals.
Well, we're not animals. We're
yes,
human
we,
beings.
We absolutely are made of meat and bone and hair and all the stuff that animals are made of.
Yeah, but we are slightly more conscious than most of the animals
only,
around us.
Only very yes. slightly.
But at least we can make that decision. We can have this discussion and decide to do something that benefits all of us and instead of just benefiting some of us. Because the current system as it is not a solution, clearly. Nobody is happy.
Listen, I could talk to you all day. I think this is fascinating stuff. I would encourage anybody who's interested to take a look at Michael's books. They really are, they're eye-opening. They're different. You don't have to, by the end of it, decide that that's the truth. That's
exactly.
the beauty of it. But, I mean, you could be onto something. And who's to say you're not? You and Graham Hancock and Zacharias, what's his name? And, you know, there are a lot of people who are talking about how everything is not as it seems.
Yeah, exactly. And what I didn't finish, and I, before you finish here, is this, sure, the donut-shaped stones,
yep,
are actually vortex energy-generating tools. They create incredible amounts of energy. They suck in the ambience and the frequencies around from the ambience, mm-hmm, and they amplify it. Remember, the shape of an atom is a torus shape. The shape of our, mm-hmm, solar system is a torus shape. The shape of our galaxy is a torus. Everything in nature, as it manifests out of the ether, takes on this torus shape. That is the source of its energy. So these donut-shaped stones are remnants of possibly these Anunnaki scientists that were here doing all kinds of stuff that knew how to generate energy out of the ether, out of nothing. And these donut-shaped stones are the leftover.
So when you find one, you're actually, you could be picking up
ancient technology.
The, and not only that, but the secret to
free energy.
Unlimited power.
Exactly. And we have two of these stones in two labs, one in Seattle, one in Colorado. And the scientists, they are all nuclear physicists and that are working and researching these stones, are finding phenomenal evidence to support what I've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
One of these stones crashed the TSA security system at Doha International Airport when I was taking it to the USA. It brought the airplane to a standstill.
That's not good to travel with, Ben.
Yeah.
No.
I'm just sharing with you.
I would be very uncomfortable sharing a plane with you where you got your bag full of rocks.
We're dealing with advanced technology. And then finally, the cone-shaped tools that, yeah, I've been picking up, find that they actually are all over the world, ancient times,
yeah,
that were most likely used to channel the sound and the resonance through the cone-shaped tool, like a tip of a laser beam,
yeah,
where it focuses the sound because it creates vortex technology. It creates a vortex field of sound and resonance,
yeah,
and shoots it out as a coherent SASER beam. So we're dealing with SASER technology, sound resonance technology in ancient times, together with these donut-shaped tools.
All right, Michael, we got to get out of here, but there we go. Michael Tellinger, we've only just scratched the surface. CliffCentral.com.